Hi, welcome to How Did You Learn to Do That, where you will hear tips, guidance, and stories to help you to have a fulfilling life and career. The inspirational stories that you will hear from people will inspire you to know that you can create anything you want in your life, and it just takes commitment and action. So I'm excited to have you here. I'm excited for you to hear these stories, these guidance, and the tips that I'll be sharing. And if you have any questions, you can always reach out to me, info@howdidyoulearntodothat.com. And you can connect with us on social media. We're on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. At How Did You Learn to Do That? And we would love if you could help us grow and expand this podcast by reviewing us on Apple Podcasts as well as on YouTube and sharing the episodes with your family and your friends and helping us continue to spread the message that we all are deserving of a fulfilling life and we can be the catalysts in our lives to create that. All right, stay tuned for the next episode. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to welcome Kelly Collins to the How Did You Learn to Do That podcast. So I'll tell you a little bit about her. So Kelly is a yoga, wellness, and empowerment teacher and host of the podcast Soul Spark with Kelly Collins. Kelly is a woman on a mission to help raise the collective consciousness through reconnecting and rebalancing the mind, body, spirit with movement, breath work, and mindfulness practices. She is passionate about empowering people to uncover the deepest parts of themselves and to heal so that they can move forward to flourish and to share their unique gifts with the world. I'm so excited to have Kelly, and she was so generous to offer a couple freebies for the audience and everyone listening. So I'll link that to the show notes as well as all the websites and social media accounts for Kelly so you can connect with her as well. Welcome, Kelly. I'm so excited to have you share your story.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to chat and to, yeah, share what I've been through with everybody.
Awesome. So we'll just get started. So what set you on this journey that you're on?
Well, it's been a lifelong journey, really. And I think, you know, a lot of times we can look back and see how everything, you know, folded into this one long journey, right? All these different aspects can bring us to this place that we're at. But you know, I've been into movement since I could remember. I was in like four or five different sports at one time when I was a kid. But my main things were gymnastics and playing soccer. So I was really into those as a child. And when I was a preteen, I think I was like 12 or 13 years old, I really, really wanted a gym membership. So my parents got me one, and my little friend and I would go, and I learned how to lift weights and all of that. And then in high school, I was a cheerleader, and my cheer coach happened to be a personal trainer. And I really, really looked up to her and just her way of living and her lifestyle. At the same time, at the age of around 16 or so, I developed body image issues and disordered eating of certain types that would, you know, come and go through the next 10 years or so. So after high school, I went to San Diego State for school, and I moved home the summer after my freshman year. And that same cheer coach got me a job at LA Fitness, which is a Southern California gym, that like a gym chain. And I started selling personal training, and through that I began training people. And so after that, I became a personal trainer, started leading group fitness classes, and then switched my major from art to kinesiology. So, you know, right there, you kind of see how just as a kid, it kind of, you know, all built up into this one thing. But again, as I was doing this through my teens and my like first half of my 20s, I had really negative self-talk, even though I was in this world of health. And I think this is something that a lot of people in the fitness world specifically can relate to. There's this pressure to have this perfect body and to, you know, have this image. And that pressure was not healthy for, you know, these issues that I'd already manifested. You know, after years of that and the negative self-talk, it really wears on you. And as most of us can relate to, whatever your limiting belief is or your negative self-talk towards yourself is, you get sick of it at a point, you know, you're ready to eventually, hopefully, figure out how to move forward from it. So around the age of like 24, I started teaching or thinking about getting my yoga teaching certification. I also wanted to be able to bring that into what I was doing with my clients. And I was thinking of it more in the aspects of stretching because I didn't really understand yoga back then. You know, it's funny to look back and think about how the universe really does bring you to what you need without you even knowing it. So I had done yoga for years, but mainly for back pain and for the stretching. And so I wanted to get my yoga certification so I could bring that to clients. And then at the same time, I knew I needed to do something because I was really, you know, sick of my mindset and how I was feeling internally. So after about a year and a half of thinking about this, I went to Bali and did my 200-hour certification. And that experience, so brief, was completely life-changing. I really learned about what the practice and the philosophy of yoga is, which is so much more than stretching and moving your body. And at the same time, I learned how to meditate and I learned how to use mantra, which was really, really powerful for me in reprogramming the negative belief patterns that were looping around and around in my mind every single day. Also, at the same time, I was able to kind of share what I was going through with people. And when we share something that we've been keeping bottled up inside, it releases this sense of shame and this like internal shame that we can carry. And the moment we can like speak it and begin to release it, we begin to heal. So I came back from that and it was still a bit of a process, but my body image completely shifted and I was able to change my relationship with myself and with how I view how I need to look and be in the world. And I began to throw myself into teaching yoga. And from there, sorry, it's a long, long story. But from there, I've been teaching yoga for the past 6 years. I now have a coaching program where I coach people through mindfulness tools and helping them implement and integrate them into their lives to wake up and to begin to heal and to take inspired action towards, you know, co-creating with the universe, or I like to say consciously creating the reality that they are in for themselves. So yeah. I know it's kind of long-winded, but that's it.
Yeah, no, that's not long at all. I think that's amazing. And I love how you can just see how everything evolved and the evolution, and even going back to, you know, going back and switching your major. I think that is key. And I totally resonate with you when you say that you didn't think much of yoga other than it's some stretching, because I had one of my friends was really into it a long time ago, 10 years ago now. And she invited me to go with her one class and I just didn't feel a burn, you know, and I was like, if I'm going to an exercise class, I wanted to feel the burn and I wanted to walk out knowing like I exercised, or, and that for some reason I thought that's what yoga was. But I've spoken about this before, but when I was pregnant, then I was like, oh, what can I do for all these, you know, cute pregnancy classes that people talk about? And obviously prenatal yoga is so popular and it's such a key part of your health while pregnant. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try this yoga thing. And I really hadn't done it since that one time my friend brought me along. But when I went, that teacher that I had for that 8 weeks or whatnot, she brought that other part of yoga that I had never experienced, that meditation, that mindfulness, that just really taking time to do some of that mantra work that you're talking about. And then also she would leave us with a mantra and an affirmation to say to ourselves before the next class, until the next class. And it was just this whole other world that I didn't know I even needed until I needed it. And yeah, and then since then, it's become such a key part of my mindfulness practice now. And I do it in the mornings. And yesterday, my daughter actually got up earlier. Like, usually she's up at 7, but yesterday she's up at 6 a.m. And so she wanted to do it too, because she's never, because I get up earlier than her, she's never seen me do it. So yeah, she sat there and she did it really well, and she's really only two, so I was really surprised with her being able to follow the video in front of us. But it was, yeah, it's just such a different practice that I never thought, you know, it was what it was until I got into it. So I totally resonate with you and what you said. And a lot of what you're talking about, it even now that you're doing coaching with people, it reminds, it takes me back to this thought that I've been having a lot lately about how, you know, when you were younger, the question, you know, when you're a preteen, you know, the question is always like, who's your best friend? Like, you know, identify your best friends, you know, and you would take so much pride in saying, so-and-so is my best friend, you know, and, you know, evidently they would always, things would always happen and unfold with your best friends, right? So I've been having this thought lately about that sense of feeling of connection, of belonging, and, you know, having this core service with yourself. And so I've been having this thought of, you know, why you should be your own best friend. And so a lot of what you're saying, it reminds me a lot of that. So do you, is that how you felt? Do you, does that resonate with you, that it's so important to really get to know yourself, to connect with yourself so that you can be your own best friend and bring that sense of joy and just understanding and compassion to yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest things that I work on people with is getting out of this, I call it shoulding. So shoulding on ourselves, like doing all the things that we've been raised, programmed to believe, not just by our parental figures, but by what we see in school, what we see on the media, all of that, as we're like impressionable and we're growing up. A lot of these practices, one of the big purposes is to take us out of like, to shut off the external noise, go inward and start to look at like, where am I shoulding in my life? Where am I doing things that don't even align with my soul, that I'm literally just doing because this is what I've been programmed to believe? Because when we're aligned with that, that's why so many people don't feel fulfilled in their lives, right? So when we can go inward, when we can and realize where we're shutting and then consciously start to shift that, that's when we are being our own best friend. That's when we're really like looking out for ourselves. And I think that, you know, and again, that's where we actually come into this deep fulfillment and this acceptance for who we are, our strengths, our weaknesses. And that's when we can really begin to tap into self-love, which is so, so, so important. So I love that you bring up that idea of being your own best friend, because you need to be. If you're not looking out for yourself, other people might be trying to look out for you, but they can't even look out for you if you're not even sure of who you really are and what you really need. Like, you can't ask for support or whatever from your family, your friends, your partner, if you don't even know what you really need, right? So that relationship with yourself is truly the most important one.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. I recently listened to a podcast with Dax Shepard, who said that the best advice he was told was, don't worry about what people are saying about you or what they think you should be doing. It's really none of your business. And I just the way he, obviously, because the way he talks is so straight to the point. And I just thought about that. I was like, it's true. It's just really none of your business what people say, because you can't control it. You can only control what you say to yourself and what you believe you should be doing for yourself, not an expectation to anyone else. And, you know, similar to you in coaching, people really understanding themselves and who they are and connecting and you know, really transcending that into the life that they want. I coach new graduates that are looking to make that transition from once they graduated university to their professional world. And I find something very similar in the sense that the question is always about what's next for you from a societal perspective. You know, what school are you going to? What are you going to major in? You know, when are you graduating? When are you going to get a job? When are you moving out? You know, all those things. But I just feel like there's never a moment from, you know, unless your parents are mindful. And I think that is something that's becoming more apparent these days. But unless, like, as soon as you enter school until you're done university, I don't know if there's ever a moment where you just stop and reflect on your own self and connect with yourself to say, who am I? What am I here to do? What is my purpose? What's my why? What, you know, what is the direction that I want to go into and what really aligns with me. And like you, and I love what you shared, because you did arts and then you realize what aligns with you is, you know, health and wellness, and then you moved into kinesiology, and that just is because you connected with yourself and you recognize those things. But a lot of people don't get that opportunity to just stop and think. They're just trying to get course after course done. And then you get out of university and there's no one there to support you to start a job. And you start your career frustrated and disconnected and not fulfilled. And exactly what you said, it's a challenge to find that fulfillment because you're not figuring out who you truly are in the first place. Mm-hmm. So when you started this journey into wellness and coaching and all of that, what were some of the thoughts that were coming to you initially, and what really inspired you to get started? And how did you start realizing that you should be coaching and sharing this wisdom with people?
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, you know, when I switched my major from art to kinesiology, I loved being an art major, and we can talk maybe a little bit about the importance of joy and recognizing your purpose. But I realized how much I wanted to help people. And I felt like through personal training, I was really helping people, which I was. And so I didn't know why, but I just had this, like, it's important that people start to pay attention to the nudges from the universe, like the nudges from our soul, right? We have our ego and we have our soul, and our ego is here to protect us. It's not this like big bad thing. I mean, it can be bad if our ego is like out of control, which for a lot of us, it does get out of control because it's trying to protect us. Mm-hmm. So it can block us from hearing our soul, hearing our intuition, because it's just trying to keep us safe and cozy in this little bubble that we're in. Unfortunately, the bubble that we're in, most of us are not happy in, going back to like not feeling fulfilled and not really knowing like what you want. It's because your ego, it's those anxious or those depressive, like whatever those thought patterns are that you have that specifically go through your head. Back then, my thoughts were really, really anxious all the time. So we all have like different types of ego thoughts, just depending on our nature and what kind of we've been programmed to like shift into. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so back then I was not connected to my soul, but I just kept having these little nudges, right? And again, it's like continued to happen over and over again. It's like, yes, I went into yoga because I saw the stretching thing and I realized like the mindset piece was important for myself and my clients. I forgot to bring that before. So that was a nudge. Another nudge was when I graduated, I was trying to get a 9-to-5 job. And I got a couple, but not the ones I wanted. So I was like, I'll just keep personal training in the meantime. Mm-hmm. So it was like, looking back, it's like, that was such a gift. So I think a lot of times when we think things are happening to us, like, why can't I get this job that I really, really want or whatever? Well, when that happens, take a step back. Like, maybe that's not what's meant for you because you're meant for something greater, you know? So those were these like little nudges all along the way. When it comes to coaching, I mean, when I switched into teaching yoga, it wasn't like a quick switch. It was this, I was still personal training for many years. I actually just stopped personal training year and a half, 2 years ago, because I still had clients that I'd been working with forever. And so I switched into yoga, but still was like making my majority of my income from personal training. And then just slowly over time, it's transitioned. I had like a yoga retreat company for a while. That lasted for about 2 years. That didn't work out. And when that didn't work out, again, it was one of those things like I worked so hard for this. And it didn't work out. And I was really disappointed. But my mindset was just like, okay, what do I actually want to be doing? And that's when I was like, I'm going to rebrand my original business. I'm going to start really focusing on mind, body, soul wellness. So taking everything I learned from my fitness career, plus my yoga career, plus all the things I've learned along the way within myself, and starting to create this like all-encompassing program, which is really what it is now. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
I think that when it comes to, you know, when you graduate, if you're unsure of where to go or what to do, or you find yourself on this path that you've been taught you should be doing, but you're not feeling happy with it, don't be afraid to take a leap of faith. A lot of times, what's meant for us doesn't make sense when the idea comes to us. If we suddenly have this like wanting to do something and it makes absolutely no sense, that's a sign that you should be doing it, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you share that actually, because I feel like I'm going through this shift right now too, where I had a goal, I had a plan that I was going to go back to work. Cause in Canada, when you get quite a long maternity leave, it's 18 months, but that means you have to return for 6 months because you get that time off and you get your income topped up. So my goal was that I was going to go back for the minimum 6 months that I had to, and then I was going to quit. And I was just going to run with this podcast and with my coaching business. And I have all these other ideas that I wanted to tackle. And then those 6 months came up. And what happened actually, just a week prior to that 6 months, a month actually prior, but a week prior is when it actually happened. I started getting colleagues emailing me about this new position. And I was like, at the first email I got, I responded with, "No, thank you. I'm actually planning to quit." Month. That was my response. And it was just like you said, the universe just had a different plan, and it just kept sending me these signs. And the work that I do now is an overdose response for our area. And I had a couple of friends reach out to me that had family that was struggling with substance use. And they really wanted to know what I thought, or if I could help them with some services or direct them where they could help their family, you know, something, anything they wanted. They just wanted some advice. And it was just so interesting because I never was one to say I knew that information, or I never was one to really share it openly. If somebody asked, I shared, but it wasn't as if I promoted it, I guess, or had, you know, it's not like my friends would have known to come to me to talk about substance use. And it was just interesting how they just came to me naturally. And it just was at that crossroad of, do I quit or do I take this job? And then I had a couple more people reach out, and I had a couple more things happen. And then I just thought to myself, you know what, I'm just going to do it and I'll see what happens. And now that I'm in it, I realize that this level of complex work is truly what I love. And I really feel at home, and, you know, and when I personally feel that when you're listening to the universe's directions, you'll get to a place where you feel at home, and just waking up, it doesn't feel like you have to, and I say this to, I've said this to a few people, is that, when we talk about imposter syndrome, you know, I feel that I feel very lucky that I, both with this podcast and with my day job, I don't feel that, because I just feel that this is who I am. I'm not trying to be something that I'm not, or I'm not having those feelings of, oh, I'm not really sure if this is the route I should be going. I have other thoughts and other feelings that about my business and work and stuff, but it's just interesting to me that how I felt 4 months ago versus now. And now I'm starting to think of the long-term work that I'm doing and how I'm going to incorporate this podcast into my day life and all of that. And it's really interesting to me, like what you said about following your heart and following the universe's signs, because you just never know. And even with this podcast, it started off as something completely different. I mean, we're just about to approach 1 year in April, and it's now shifted into something completely different. And and it's not what I had thought, but I'm so grateful for the entire journey and the experience and just being open to the shifts and the waves. And there's moments where I want to shut it down because it's so much work. But then there's moments where I have conversations with people like you that I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so meaningful. And I want to share this because it will impact so many people to just hear that they can be inspired, and there's things that you can do to help really connect with yourself, to really drive home the message that you can really work towards more of what fulfills you and brings you happiness. And so, I want to go back a little bit. So when you were just before you got that job with LA Fitness, that really kind of changed the trajectory of your life. If somebody was in the same boat as you today, what's a piece of advice you would give them as they're kind of meeting at that crossroad and wondering which way to go?
Well, it's hard because that was such an easy decision for me to make. I think that when we're at a crossroads, because there's other examples I could give where, I mean, for example, like choosing to do that yoga teacher training.
Yeah.
This is an example I give in a lot of workshops. I didn't have the money. I didn't have the time. I had never traveled by myself, let alone traveling on a flight for 24 hours to get to where I was going. And there was every excuse not to do it, but I just had this, like, I need to make it happen. And it was exciting. Like, our intuition, our bodies, like, really, really tell us our intuition, right? Like, they tell us when something's wrong, whether it's that, like, knot in your stomach, or for me, it's like my trap gets so tight, I'm like in tons of pain, or I like literally throw this one part of my back out and like can't move when something's like really, really wrong. That's when our intuition's like, alert, you know. But when our intuition is saying like, yes, do this, it's just like this, you might have this fear, which is your ego again, just being like, no, you're fine, where you are, keep doing it, you know. But you also just have this like yes in your body. It's like this like openness, maybe your heart feels open, or you just feel this like light go off in your head, whatever it is. Like we all experience it a little bit differently. So when we're faced with this like crossroads, right? Am I going to keep going straight this way? I guess no one can see me, but I'm doing a straight line with my hand. And then we have this other path that's just like veering off this other direction, which is like the path. I mean, and we have multiple paths in life, but this path to like greatness and fulfillment and feeling like we talked about in flow with our life. Like when we're aligned, we feel things flowing, right? So when we're in that state, again, our egos are, it's going to be, our heads are going to be, our thoughts are going to be like going wild, you know, like you don't have the money, you don't have the time, it's too scary. What if the plane crashes? Holy moly. I was like freaking out the whole plane ride there because I thought the plane was going to go down and I was going to die. Okay. So when that happens, just notice it. And again, that's what meditation and journaling are so powerful for, is just beginning to notice like when our mind goes a little crazy and realizing that that doesn't mean it's true. It doesn't mean we have to listen to it. But like what is our intuition telling us? Like, this is a yes, like I'm going to go for it. And there's, yes, we can be afraid of failure, but every time we fail, we learn and then we get closer to where we want to go. Right. So shifting this fear of failure around and like just trusting and taking that leap of faith and knowing that when you do take a leap of faith to, you know, switch your major from art to kinesiology, or switch your career from a 9-to-5 to a more creative path that really lights you up. Know that like you're showing yourself so much love by trusting in yourself and taking that leap of faith. And I believe that when we do that, the universe truly the universe always has our back, but the universe supports us, you know. And an I'd like to give you guys an exercise. It's really simple if you want me to give it to you.
Okay, sure.
So it's a really simple fear exercise. So when you have a fear come up, so for example, if you are, I have a client who, she's been a lawyer and she wants to switch into writing, but it has a lot of it aligns with what she's learned as a lawyer, right? So it's like, I had to write down, what's the fear? It's like, switching careers and not having the financial support to survive. Okay. And then you write down, what's the worst case scenario? Move back in with my parents, you know, can't have to like save up and like get back on my feet. And then what's the best case scenario? While my writing career takes off, I make the money, more than the money that I need to survive. I'm feeling like joyful. I get to tap into my creativity. I'm feeling fulfilled. My life has completely changed and I've gone in this different trajectory that like I've always really wanted deep down in my soul, right? So it's like when we look at that, it's like, okay, is it worth it to take that leap of faith? It almost always is, you know? The fear, the worst case scenario is not usually that bad. Yeah, it would suck to have to like move home with your parents.
Mm-hmm.
But in everyone's situation is different. For her, she was like, I would enjoy this. It would be fun. It would be fine. You know? And I'm like, see, it's not that, it wouldn't be that bad. So it's just, you can do this simple exercise. Write down the fear, write down the worst case scenario and the best case scenario. The worst case scenario is like, I would die. Maybe take a look at that, you know, but usually it's not that.
Yeah. I love that. I love that because you're so right that once, we have a lot of thoughts in our heads that overwhelm us. And me personally, I need, you know, pen and paper to just write down my thoughts. So whenever I'm feeling overwhelmed, I just write down what I'm feeling. And I feel like just the act of writing, it takes it off out of your head and onto the paper. And what you're sharing about writing your fear, I think is amazing because you're right. When we have those fearful thoughts, it is our ego, but it is also just pressures that we have, from society too, that says, oh, you spent all this money to get to this career. And I'm thinking about your client that's a lawyer, and it's just like, you studied so hard, you worked so hard, you took a spot in a law school, and you got this career, and you have this trajectory. And Michelle Obama says this in her biography that I always reference to, is that, you know, she checked off all the boxes that she was required to as a society, right? And depending on what kind of socioeconomic background you come from and what kind of family you come from, there's a lot of pride and a lot of pressure. There's a lot of that also that comes with it. And Michelle says that, you know, she had a lot of this fear. She knew she didn't love being a lawyer. She didn't love this trajectory. She had a partner position ready for her if she wanted it. But she decided to go into community organizing with a nonprofit, which was way less than she was making, but was aligned with exactly what she wanted to do. And she loved it and absolutely loved it. And you can just see the trajectory that community organizing took her, right? I mean, she met Brock at the law firm, mm-hmm. but she joined him in this community organizing. And then you can see what happened to their life thereafter. And I completely agree with you. The fear sometimes gets in the way of what we want to do. But if you just really think it through, it ends up being more manageable. And I liken it to a lot to risk management too, right? So you identify the risk, like what's the worst thing that can happen and what can we do to mitigate or manage it? So I love that exercise. And I hope that if you're listening, you've paused the episode here and done that right now for something that you're thinking of shifting towards. So I love that. And so I just had the question and now it's slipped my mind.
Can I comment on your Michelle Obama story?
Oh, yeah.
Like you remember it?
Yeah.
I just wanted to point out that, you know, her story is a perfect example, right? Just because you, like you said, went to school, spent all this time and money and effort doing something like becoming a lawyer, like she took skills from that into her community organizing. Yeah. So it's like nothing you ever do, no relationship, no job, no schooling, nothing that you've done is a waste. Even if you want to switch into a different career path, or if you need to end a relationship, or you need to move somewhere, you know, it's like every single thing that we've done up to this point has shaped us and has taught us. And there's going to be aspects of that past thing that you're able to take into future things always. Like everything you've done in the past, you can take with you into the future, and none of it's a waste of time.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing because I completely agree that there's often times where you're doing something and you're just like, okay, this no longer serves me. And that transcends to relationships, to careers, to jobs, to everything. And, it, and what you just said actually reminded me of someone I know who was not an independent person, you know, was very sheltered. And she got into this relationship that progressed really quickly into a marriage because of pressures. You know, it wasn't within her own decision to do that, and not her partner's either. It was external forces that pressured them to really get married. But that marriage lasted 2 months, right? And now she, in the process of getting a divorce and going through this and healing and all that, she has just turned into someone I don't even recognize. She's just so independent. She's doing all of this on her own without really talking about it or seeking advice. And previous to this, it would be like roundtable meetings of everyone tell me what I need to do, you know, situations. And now it's just all on her own. And I'm so proud of her. And so what you say about every experience teaching us something, I think that that's so true, because the good and the bad, it just teaches us lessons that allows us to move forward. And what I was actually going to say was that a lot of the times when we're looking to do new things or something that's completely different, fear is just a natural part of what comes to be in times of uncertainty or where you're unsure. And a lot, for example, my daughter started preschool in January, and for 2 weeks I had so much anxiety around it. I was so scared. I was scared because it's preschool. It's a bit more structured. It's mixed age. So it's between 2 and 6. And she had just turned 2 in November. And I was really nervous. And I was nervous because of my own fears of, you know, not putting too much pressure on her, allowing, you know, do I let her just be a toddler and go to a play-based school, or does she thrive in the structured Montessori independent style, which she, when she was born, she was independent, like more than I've ever seen before. And so I brought on Montessori and I learned about it because of the way she was. And I just followed her cues and what she thrived in the environment. So for 2 weeks, I was so scared, and I called a bunch of daycares and I said, can I get my daughter on the wait list? You know, I might need to come in as soon as possible. And I told my husband, I was like, you know, let's take her out and whatnot. Of course, I was fearful because it was new. But now we're in week 4 and she's thriving. She's doing so well, and she's doing so well at home, and she just loves it. And I said to my husband last night, I said, oh, I'm so grateful I didn't give in to my fear of pulling her out and projecting my own fears on her and impacting her life and how, you know, the impacts that she could have. And if she ever tells me she doesn't want to do it, then maybe we can have a discussion. But I didn't want my fears to get in the way. And so what you shared about, what we shared in that exercise, I love, because although anything that you want to do that's new is uncertain, it can be scary and challenging, when you really write down why you're doing it, what the outcome of that will be, and the steps that you can get to there, it's a lot easier to manage. And so a lot of the hard things that I would say, and this goes actually a question back to your personal training, a lot of hard things that you need to do, and a lot of the things that you want, the dreams that you have, the goals that you want, it takes a lot of hard and tough decisions and discipline and work on your part to get there. But once you get there, you feel that sense of happiness and joy, just relief, or proud, feeling proud of yourself that you got there. And so so do you pull a lot of that trajectory of those, not the stages of grief, but the stages of transformation, which I'm calling it, from your personal training experience too, with clients, just seeing, you know, when they come in and the fear they have, and then what happens when they commit to themselves and their dreams?
Yeah, I would say a lot of that has probably influenced me. And, you know, you hear different takes on willpower. And, you know, I heard from someone the other day and they were saying, like, you shouldn't have to have willpower. But I'm a big believer in willpower. I think at the same time, if we can set ourselves up for success with like the environment and the people we surround ourselves with and all of that, that can just make having willpower so much easier. But I think committing to a goal, right? Choosing to commit to a goal, whether it be a, you know, getting a coach to help you work on your physical fitness, or, I mean, I hired a business coach last year. That was terrifying. I spent a lot of money that I, again, didn't have, but it completely, again, changed the trajectory, again, of my life. And I'm such a strong believer in all of that. And yeah, I do think it goes back to just everything I've experienced. Like, when we choose to commit to ourselves and whatever the goal it is, and when we actually, like, commit and do it, we, like, just show ourselves that we are worth it. We feel more empowered. We feel more capable of achieving anything that we put our minds to. And going back to, you know, building that willpower and that discipline, I don't know if your audience knows much about the chakra system, but there are energetic systems of our body. And our third chakra, our solar plexus, which is one that I actually had a strong imbalance in, and went a lot back to my self-worth. And with that, kind of my disordered eating that I experienced through, you know, 10 years of my life, it was in our solar plexus. It's our center of will and the ability to take action to transform our lives. So it's interesting kind of saying that, because I kind of see how I was able to shift it, right? But when we have a goal and we don't commit to it and we end up procrastinating, I like to say that this is self-sabotage, because we might, like, set a goal, and then when we don't stick to it or we procrastinate on it, we're self-sabotaging ourselves because we don't actually feel worthy of achieving it. So I know I kind of veered off a little bit, but I think that's something important to talk about, because whenever I do teach this to people, they're usually like, oh, that, like, makes a lot of sense. Like, why are you, when you set a goal, why don't you stick with it? You're not telling yourself you're worth it to, like, get uncomfortable. There's the ego again. And to, like, set yourself up, set up your environment. If it's a physical goal, like setting up your workout bag in the morning before you go to work, and then making sure that you go to the gym or whatever, right? It all comes back to feeling worthy and showing yourself that love to commit, whether it be a fitness goal or a mental goal or a spiritual goal. So I hope that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I love that, because I excel at all, you know, I feel like I prioritize everything else in my life except for eating well and exercising. And I always, my husband is so good at this because he prioritizes it. And he always tells me, he says, if you fall ill or if you're not taking care of your body and your health, he says, everything else doesn't matter. You know, you won't be present to take care, do the work that you're required to do, or to show up for your podcast, or to do all these things. And he says, your work will continue to go on. He's like, your podcast may, you know, stop, you know, producing, and may not, obviously you're not there, so it won't work anymore. He says, but, you know, the people that will miss you are me and our daughter and your family and all that, if you were to die. Because you're not taking care of yourself or your health, or something terrible was to happen. And I always have to remind myself of that, because I need to, in my mind, reprioritize what's important to me. And so this year, for 2021, and every year I do goals, and like you said, I am the worst at staying to all my goals, but I'm the best at making goals. So I always, every year, have 30 or 40 different goals. This year, though, I decided I was just going to have 3 goals. And instead of having the goal of lose weight, because I feel like I've had that every year, this year was just about mindfully meal plan and meal prep every week consistently, if I can. And if I skip a week, that's okay. I can start the next week. But that was the piece that I wanted to pull out of it, because last year it was exercise and I did really well. I exercised 4 to 5 times a week for 6 months until the pandemic hit and the gym closed. or 4 months until the pandemic hit, but meal planning was something I did not do. And it's something that I am not a, Jay Shetty said this actually recently. He's like, I'm an eat to live kind of guy. And I was like, that's totally me. I just eat because I have to, you know, like if I don't have to eat, I don't want to, but I do, you know, I don't mindfully eat. Like I eat really quick and really fast so that I can move on to the next task. And that's just, I feel like something that I've had to do since university, where you're just trying to quickly get enough time in to study or between classes and whatnot. So I still eat really fast. But this year I'm really trying to be mindful of that, mindful of, you know, my goal of meal planning and prepping and just being conscious about what I'm eating, and really appreciating what I am putting in my mouth and appreciating the flavors, because I feel like I just eat quickly to get on to the next thing, as opposed to really being grateful and appreciating what's in front of me. And I just recently finished the second round of The Magic. I don't know if you've read that book, but one of the practices she says is that whenever you eat something in front of you, just leave it in front of you for a minute before you touch it and just look at everything and thank every single person or thing that got that food onto your plate. So going all the way from the farmers to the soil to the weather and then the transport and the processors and everything until you got it in front of your plate and you can appreciate it. And so, yeah, so I appreciate what you share about setting your goal and just making yourself worth it, because I feel that sometimes, I mean, I'm only speaking about myself personally here, but sometimes I do prioritize other things that'll, I guess, give you more instant feelings of gratification than just really taking care of myself and, you know, what's important to me. And yeah, and I love slow-paced exercises now. Before it was higher intensity. But I realized lately that if I wanted to exercise, I can do more slower paced exercise than rather than high intensity, if that means I'm going to get to that exercise every day. And that's just all a part of connecting with yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't like to really at all talk about weight loss with people or anything like that anymore. And I think as a society, we've been, again, going back to programming, we've been programmed to believe that we need to work out really, really hard and burn all these calories and eat super, super clean to, quote unquote, look and feel good bodies. But it really, so what I focus on with people now isn't really exercise. Movement is a big part of my program, and having people making sure that they're choosing a type of exercise, like you said, that they enjoy, that's sustainable for them, that makes them feel good in their body. Not, you don't want to feel drained and shaky after a workout or a yoga class. Like you want to feel energized.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling drained and shaky, look at that. Like, why do you feel the need to kill yourself? I mean, I taught spin for 10 years. I used to teach 8 spin classes a week. All the meanwhile, always counting my calories or like eating too much and then eating too little and all of this stuff. And I'll tell you, from switching to just really focusing on my mindfulness, like you mentioned, and my healing and my self-worth, like why do I feel the need to do these things? Because I've been taught that this is what I need to do to look good. Yeah. Be what society deems we look good. I feel so much better in my body than I did way back then.
Yeah.
So it really, really comes down to, like you said, choosing a type of physical movement that makes you feel good. That can be a HIIT workout if that makes you feel good. There's different body types, different energy types. There's so many different types of people. So it's a unique thing to each of us. Hiking, going out in nature once a week is one of my like most important forms of movement, because it makes me feel like so good and grounded. Yoga, there's tons of different types of yoga to try. You don't need to do a vinyasa class if you don't like it. You can do a yin practice, which is like you do 5 postures, usually like the whole class, and you're deep stretching, you know? So choosing a form of movement that makes you feel good. Starting to notice how your food makes you feel, like you just mentioned. And I have a friend who does intuitive eating work. And her whole thing is like, how does it make you feel? And when you can start to really look at like, what do different types of foods make me feel? Okay, maybe everyone says gluten's bad for you. And like for me, gluten doesn't make me feel good. I don't have celiac, but I don't usually consume it because I do feel inflamed. My skin breaks out, that sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. So just start to notice how different types of food make you feel and then eat that way. You don't need to eat low carb. You don't need to eat low fat. You don't need to eat meat. You don't need to not eat meat. Mm-hmm. But just notice how the energy of the food is making you feel and eat that way. And then at the same time, work on your mental and emotional wellness, your mindfulness. Like, what beliefs are keeping you from feeling good? And like you mentioned, what your husband said, like showing up fully in all the aspects of your life that are important to you, your relationships, your job, all of that. Because at the end of the day, that the mindset, the how we feel emotionally and at a soul level, energetically, is the most important piece. When we heal all that, we again get aligned, like I've been saying, you're going to be looking and feeling good in your body.
Yeah.
And showing up that way. So we've heard it a million times. Beauty comes from the inside out, but it really does. Like when you feel good inside it, you glow, you know? So yeah, I know that was a mouthful, but.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. I love that because I feel like, while I was on this 18-month maternity leave, I kind of went through those cycles. When I first was going on maternity leave, there was something that my sister had said to me that really got me kind of, I don't know why it ingrained itself into my head, but sometimes people say things and they just stick with you. And she said that somebody had just returned back to work after mat leave, and she looked so good, and she was more fit after having a kid than before having a kid. And that colleague had said to her that a lot of it had to do with breastfeeding, and that's how she lost a lot of weight. And so my sister told me this, and you know, she just kind of said it in passing, not with judgment, not putting any pressure on me, anything like that. She just wouldn't share a story, but that stuck with me. And so when I had my daughter, I was like, and I realized that, you know, I am going to be successful with breastfeeding and, you know, got my milk in and all that. I was so excited because I was like, I'm going to lose weight. You know, everybody says you lose 500 calories every time you breastfeed. And so if I'm breastfeeding 8 times a day, like, you know, that's a lot, you know, and I'm going to
disappear.
Yeah, I'm just going to lose this all naturally. And I'm just going to, you know, so that was my mindset. And honestly, like I was putting that in my Fitbit and my fitness pal, I was putting that in that I was breastfeeding so I can get that workout, you know, and it was so unhealthy. And I just kept thinking, and I wasn't losing the weight. And then I got to about like 6 months and I was like, honestly, I literally have been doing this for 6 months straight and I haven't lost any more weight than what my daughter's weight was. And even when I was pregnant, I was like, I can't gain more than 30 pounds because that's the average. And I worked really hard at that, you know, not limiting myself from eating, but just like tracking it. I mean, when you're pregnant, you have to track it for the doctor anyway. So I would really pay attention to that number. And I was, for some reason, so proud of myself that I only gained 30 pounds and I would like kind of flaunt it. And so when I had my daughter, I lost 10 pounds. I didn't lose the 20, and I still haven't lost the extra 20 pounds. And so once I got to the 6 months, and I realized, you know, this is not happening for me. I was on every single blog, reading everything. And people said, you know, it doesn't always happen for people. Like there's other things. And then, I kind of got to a place where I knew I had a ton of family weddings coming up. And I had all this stuff and I said, okay, I want to lose all this weight because I have all these weddings coming up. And my mind kept telling me, you know, why do you keep wanting to lose weight for family functions? And that's kind of how I've always been. It's just that if I needed to have a wedding or a family reunion or something in order to motivate me to lose the weight. And it was always around losing weight so I can show up and show everyone my new body. That was always it. And but I got to a place where in healing and doing a lot of this mindfulness work during my maternity leave, and really coming to terms with myself and realizing that, you know what, I feel okay, and I don't need to fit into this model that society tells me I need to fit into. And I saw some of my other mom friends around me that I had met, how unhealthy their relationship had been with losing weight and getting to the bounce back. How quickly can they get back to their pre-baby body? And I just kind of was watching that and observing it. And I was like, oh gosh, like that is not who I want to be. And that's not what I want for my daughter either. And so I recently got to a place where there was something coming up, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'm just going to continue living life. And then I had to pause and be like, but why don't I want to lose weight? Why don't I want to exercise? Am I not motivated enough? Like, is something wrong with me? I'm not feeling well. And I had kind of that, you know, like that up where I was feeling really good. And then I got to this place of like, oh no, like I'm not motivated to lose weight. Oh no, I'm not motivated to, you know, put all these things in motion that I usually do. So why is that? And I really had to kind of, and that was my ego, a part of my ego speaking. And I really had to kind of come back to just telling myself that, you know, if I'm feeling fine, if I'm feeling okay, I'll just do what's most important to me. And yeah, that's how I came up with the meal planning, because that's the thing I've always wanted to tackle, just because I want my daughter to have a healthy relationship with food. Mm-hmm. And I was never really taught a healthy relationship with food, you know, and my mom, you know, she was a single mom and raised us, but she never really taught us about healthy relationship with food. It was always like, if you're hungry in the moment, let's go and get food, versus like, what do we have and how can we create a meal together at home? Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I really appreciate what you share about that kind of like society's expectations, being mindful and really connecting with yourself to know what it is that you really want, and doing what will allow you to thrive in your own way and not try to fit into this mold that you're thinking that you need to fit into, or society thinks you need to fit into. So we're just about to wrap up, but I just wanted to ask you, actually. So I just shared about how sometimes I go and I have such a great revelation and feeling so healed, and then I start questioning and my ego kind of creeps back up. So does that ever happen to you? And if so, how do you self-reflect and kind of remind yourself about how you truly feel and where you want to be?
Yeah, well, first I want to just like commend you for your whole story, because I think it's just the perfect example of how when we choose to heal ourselves, it's like now you're going to be able to raise your daughter from a healed place. And I think that's something that's so important for us to remember. Like when we do our own healing, if we choose to have children, that's going to really play a huge role into how they develop, because most of our programming takes root from the time we're like actually in our mother's womb until we're like 12 to 14. And then things happen as adults that can also cause programming, kind of like you talked about with pregnancy, right?
Yeah.
So I just think that's so beautiful and inspiring to like anyone who listens, whether or not you're a mother or just anyone, knowing that when you do your healing, you're going to influence the world in a positive way and help others do their healing, right? I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing without my healing, and you probably wouldn't either. You wouldn't. So it's really powerful. For me, I have, you know, we all have the things that we're good at and the things that are challenges for us because of usually like trauma that's happened or programming or that sort of thing. So while I'm really good at eating clean and exercising in a way that makes me feel good now, that obviously from my story, you guys know, wasn't always a thing. Something that I've had to work a lot with is my finances and how I deal with that, because my parents lost everything in the 2008 recession. I think I was 18 years old. And I experienced so much shame and trauma around it, and that like instability and that fear that comes with not having enough like financial resources or any sort of resources, shelter, food, whatever. So that caused a lot of trauma within me, a lot of, like I talked about shame earlier, shame around, you know, I had all my friends had like wealthy parents in college, and then I was working, and then I was always broke, and then I started using credit cards and all this stuff. Like, yeah, it was not a good situation. And it's been something that's ebbed and flowed throughout my adult life, like really feeling like I'm doing really well, and then feeling how that trauma is still able to keep me like stuck in certain aspects, and then it'll pull me back. So, I mean, it's something I've really, really worked on a ton in the last couple of years, and I feel like I'm in a really good place now. But again, those, it's, and with anything, with money or with relationships, or even with like how we look and feel, we can have this like lack mentality or this abundance mentality. So I've really been able to shift into when I start to feel that fear coming up around like, will this retreat sell, and will I be able to like pay the bills or whatever, you know? I'm able to see it and be like, am I in a lack mentality or an abundance mentality? And again, it's with other things too. It's with relationships, any type of relationship. It's like with getting a job, you can have that mentality. It functions for every part of our lives. So that's one way, like just stopping and being like, where am I at right now? Okay, if I'm in that lack scarcity mentality, how can I pull myself back into abundance? Mm-hmm. And this is where journaling really, really comes in. You mentioned earlier, like that releasing, like when we journal, when we stream of consciousness journal, we release pent up emotion. We release thoughts and programming that are in us that we're not even conscious of, right? Our subconscious limiting beliefs, we're able to get that stuff out on paper. And we're able to release shame, guilt, whatever it is. And then I love to write in a gratitude list.
Yeah.
So this is how we can really pull ourselves into that state of abundance, right? Really like looking at all that you have and feeling it, not just writing it down and being like, you know, but like actually like feeling the gratitude for all the little things that you have in your life can really just help to like bring you back into that state of abundance. And then another practice that I really love is just like when I'm going for a walk, like I'm walking my dog or I'm anywhere, I'll just start to, and this is without even being in a bad state of mind, this is just something I like to do every day because it really like pulls me up into that higher vibration. It's like looking around and it's like, wow, look how many clouds there are in the sky. Look how many blades of grass there are, how many grains of sand, like really taking inventory of how much of everything there is, and bringing ourselves into that state of abundance.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like how I think journaling though is just such a big piece for like any time that we find ourselves really working towards something and feeling good and then feeling that dip, because it's going to happen. It's inevitable. But the more aware and conscious we are of it, the quicker we can catch it and then set ourselves back up.
Yeah, I completely agree that it's important to it all comes back to just connecting with yourself and really knowing yourself, I think, because then you can catch those moments, right? You can catch those feelings, and then you have these tools in your toolbox that you know you can go to that can bring you back to that place. And somebody who was on my podcast, I was watching their story recently, and they suffer from bipolar and borderline personality disorder. And she said she knows all the things that she needs to do to get better. And some of those supports are outside of her, and it's within her support system. But she just has to acknowledge when she's feeling a certain way because she can recognize it. And then she pulls out all these things, even though she knows it's so hard to do. Because it's the last thing she wants to do in that moment, but because she's put a system in place that she herself knows that these are the three things that I need to do, and here's all the people that will help me do those if I can't do it on my own. And I think that is so beautiful, because similar to what you share, when you recognize who you are and you connect with who you are and your soul, your soul, your mind, and your spirit, and body, and you just recognize these are the things I need to do, and I'm not feeling as connected today, or I'm not feeling as aligned today, so let me pull out these things, or let me, you know, if I'm feeling fearful, let me see if I can do that exercise that you talked about. Just really pulling out and knowing what you need in that moment, just from listening and being aware of yourself and your body. I've really appreciated this story and having you on the podcast. It's been such an amazing conversation. I know it's going to inspire and impact so many people listening. I so appreciate it. Like I said, Kelly has been generous to offer some of her freebies, especially a free 20-minute call with her. So I'll link that all in the show notes and on Instagram so you can connect with her. I really appreciate you being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a great conversation. I loved hearing everything you had to say, and I could keep talking to you forever. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to the end of that episode. I hope that you have learned something from that episode that can have you getting closer to a fulfilling life and career. There's so much out there in the world that you can learn, you can experience, and you can apply to your current life that will help you start making those little steps towards a career that you love and that you're inspired by. So I'm excited for you. I can't wait to hear what you're doing. I would love for you to share with me over on our social media, or you can send me an email and let me know. You can visit our website, howdidyoulearntodothat.com, for the show notes and for blog posts and to hear more about what we're up to. And of course, we would love if you could help us grow by reviewing us on Apple Podcasts as well as on YouTube and sharing with your family and your friends. All right, we'll see you next time. Bye.